You are now listening to the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network.
Welcome to New World Pictures Podcast, and we're going to watch every single movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
Are we really going to watch every movie made by New World Pictures?
We are! And Erica!
Rack them up!
And we are at the end of June Boom. That's right. We're talking about the action movies released by New World Pictures, and we're going out with a real bang with not only the movie, but also our guest. He is a returning guest. He is also the co-host of the Get Me Another podcast. Chris Iannacone is back on the show.
Hello, everybody. Oh, thrilled to be back. Oh, there we go. Oh, wow. Wow.
We got a bigger venue for you for this
Oh my God. It's just, cafe. You know, it keeps, I didn't realize there was a balcony. So it's going back. You know, that's, wow. That is... Yeah. Well, now I'm going to look back at my previous appearances and be like, where were all those people? My God, we're building an audience. That's, you know.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right. But great to have you here as we discuss a Roger Corman era action film. We're talking 1981's Firecracker.
See Jillian Kestner, grand prize winner at the Black Belt Olympics. She'll mix seduction with destruction in the screen's first erotic kung fu classic.
That's right, 1981.
Short and sweet.
Sweet. Wow. 1981's Firecracker, a.k.a. Naked Fist.
Naked Fist.
Truly.
Amazing. Amazing.
Brought to you by ADR Recording. Why record audio when you make a movie when there is ADR recording? We hand your actors microphones that they hold right up to their mouths as they talk to make sure there's that bristling static to add an extra layer to your film. Why mess with booms or lavalier mics when you can record the entire script later in a garage with your cast or not? Forget crisp, clean audio. ADR is here.
Oh. Thank you, Brian. That sounds like a really fun idea. It's going to be a great episode, everybody.
This was shot like an Italian movie. Like, there is just trace of original audio that I could tell from this movie.
Can we talk about that trailer for a second?
Please.
Screen's first erotic kung fu classic.
Mm-hmm.
First of all,
there's a lot of promises.
Classic is doing a lot of work.
Yeah,
presumptuous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
but I think what we need to look at as we go through this movie is the ratio of eroticism to kung fu.
Yes,
because it's not what I expected given that trailer.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's not a one for one.
It is not. No, it is
I think the, I kung, the erotic is first in the sentence, but the kung fu is still doing most of the work.
Yeah. No question.
Yeah,
no
this
question.
This movie, this is like a over 40 erotic kung fu movie where there's a lot more kung fu.
Was that a magazine a back in the day? That
was, I know, I'm just saying, if this was going for the 18-year-olds, it'd be a lot more erotic, little less kung fu.
Didn't read middle-aged erotica when you were a kid?
I mean...
I'm just saying, there's more... I just got in a big fight. I'm exhausted.
Yeah,
I just
need
to go to bed.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
By the way, when you do sign up for AARP, they will start sending you middle-aged erotica. So
it's in the form of coupons.
Nothing sexier than a deal.
No, that's, honestly, that's true. That's honestly true. That's actual. Wow. That's actual truth. Bro. Right there.
Yeah, we when you find a great deal. Right, how long do you live off that? I mean, you know, for weeks.
What do you think about when you're having sex? Savings.
Two for three or three for two?
Oh, let's go.
This was directed by Sirio Santiago, who is on your shirt, Chris.
Nice.
Director of Striker and Cover Girl Models and several other movies for Roger Corman's New World Pictures, starting with 1973's Fly Me and 1974's TNT Jackson, which some might say has the exact same story as this movie, only in TNT Jackson, she's looking for a missing brother, not a sister, so very, very different.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about.
Not at all the same.
No.
The script for this, this movie, in fact, is even co-written by Ken Metcalf, who co-wrote TNT Jackson.
He did. Yeah. And stars in both movies in basically the same part.
Yep. He's in a lot of the Philippine set movies for New World. Almost all of them, really. And this theme of like recapturing this exact storyline, it's a theme that Santiago would return to often. In 1993's Angel Fist...
For centuries, karate has evolved as the most lethal art of the Orient. In Manila, an American fighter is brutally murdered. Now, her sister has set out to find that killer.
You may be a cop in L.A. It's Manila.
Tough Turf's Katya Sassoon enters a kickboxing tournament to find out who murdered her sister. Mm-hmm. In 1994's One Man Army,
Jerry Trimble, PKC kickboxing champion of the world, returns home to a mystery.
I think my grandfather got suspicious and didn't come out alive.
It's a grandfather's death that spurs the hero's journey. 2005's Death Fist 2050 is a switcheroo of Angel Fist in that it's a male lead looking for his brother. Mm.
What the hell's going on here?
He's looking for his brother.
Johnny Danko.
Shit, he's dead.
You want to find out who beat your brother? You're going to have to get in with us.
Does his dress also get torn as he's getting chased?
Correct. Yep.
Okay, cool. Yep. Yeah. Adding that to the list.
Right? Still... And whenever anybody has a sword or a knife or scissors, they just cut his pants off. Just right at the crotch. Just snip them right off. Oh. Boom.
Corman would also get into the act. He would reuse this formula with 1994's Angel of Destruction.
Honolulu's sexiest cop is turning up the heat. When her private eye sister gets caught between a rock and a hard place.
So this was just a theme of protagonists looking for a murderer of their sibling going into some new environment.
It's a perennial.
I mean, it's you can't fight the results here. This stars Jillian Kessner, who we also talked about earlier this year in Beverly Hills Vamp. She is one of the vamps. She plays the vamp that turns Tim Conway Jr. into an undead husk of a human being and also a vampire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kastner was married to cinematographer Gary Graver, who would become Orson Welles' cameraman at the end of Orson Welles' career, but who shot a huge amount of movies and many for New World as well. Deathsport, Moonshine County Express, Grand Theft Auto, and They're Playing with Fire. He also shot the narration section of Beverly Hills Vamp. So,
Oh yes.
So he was always working hard. Jillian Kessner, though, she also had appeared before this in 1978's Star Hops for director Barbara Peters, who directed Humanoids from the Deep and Bury Me an Angel and for New World Pictures. Here's where you can watch Firecracker if you want to catch up. It is on Chow TV. It is on Tubi. It is also on this Lethal Ladies Collection from the Roger Corman Classics, this DVD with TNT Jackson and Too Hot to Handle.
TNT Jackson, it's handy that it's there because you can contrast and compare them as I will say, as I did in preparation for this episode. Mm-hmm. Oh.
You did your homework. God bless. I, you
know, star student.
I get a star.
All right, let's talk about what this movie is about. Mark, what is Firecracker about?
Firecracker is a movie about persistence. You know, if you're a small to medium-sized business owner, you're going to face challenges. Personnel, finances, revenue growth, or the consistent loss of your heroin shipment. No matter what it is, though, there's no reason to lose your head. Losing a shipment, making arrangements for another, lose another shipment, take out a loan, it's no big deal. You have to move forward. Because there's a fight to the death tonight, and you've got clients to entertain.
Yeah.
Now,
all of that is true. Yeah.
Just for shits and giggles.
Yes.
I asked ChatGPT what it thought of this movie.
Oh. Uh-oh. It's always good to know what AI thinks.
And it said, Firecracker is a martial arts exploitation film where an undercover woman infiltrates a crime ring in the Philippines by punching, kicking, and occasionally stripping her way through a plot that doesn't fully commit to logic, gravity, or continuity. Fights break out for no other reason than to justify the runtime. At one point, a villain dies by being kicked into a table saw. The film insists it's a thriller, but behaves more like a dream you forget halfway through.
What? Wow. ChatGPT came up with that?
That's a hot take.
What a
little minx ChatGPT is.
I just got fed so many opinions on Firecracker. I just, what did it just get all a letterbox? We'll get to letterbox in a second.
Computers are coming from my job, guys. I can feel it. What this is about is not that comprehensive.
No, no.
It also finished off, by the way. I said, what did you mean? It said, Mark, you're an asshole. And I was wow, that is... Wow. Accurate. Wow. Thank you.
It was like crunch this, and then it just did boobs with the 8008.
Nice.
5.
Chris, what is this movie?
Firecracker
about?
Is about a black American woman who travels to Hong Kong in search of her lost brother. Oh no! Wait, hold on. Oops, I'm sorry. Oops. I'm getting new pages here. Yeah. Okay. We're sure. All right. Firecracker is about a white American woman who travels to Manila in search of her lost sister and gets mixed up with villains in the drug trade.
Different. Boy, that's
very different. Very different. Yeah. It's very
so
different.
So subtle. Very just a little tweak.
Manila, Hong Kong, two different cities,
two
both
totally
in Asia,
different
but
different
city.
But different.
And
but you know, different.
Brothers and sisters are different kinds of siblings.
They are.
Yeah. They are.
Yeah.
Separated by chromosome. Mm-hmm. Erica, what is Firecracker about?
You know, I don't have a sister, but Firecracker showed me that there's always one sister who's super responsible and learns martial arts and keeps an eye on you. And there's another sister who goes out of the country and then gets lost and does drugs. So, you know what? I've never been happier to have a brother, because guess how many times I've had to save him using martial arts? None, which means my martial arts are rusty, but I've never had to come and save him. I always know exactly where he's at.
You didn't have to go travel to Hong Kong?
That's I did not.
That's pretty good. That's pretty amazing.
Or Manila?
I thought this movie was about when you learn a new form of martial arts, the real innovators are going to find a brand new application for that martial art.
Mm-hmm.
Without spoiling anything. Without 100%. Spoiling anything. Now it's time for the Letterboxd synopsis. Chris, are you in Letterboxd?
I am not on Letterboxd because of my need to be very honest about the things I watch, but also I don't know if I want to be that open with myself. To the world.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
That's
I feel like
sense.
This is for a different podcast where we dive deep into that.
You can't be that honest.
That's the Chris
You're
cast.
Afraid of your own honesty.
It's Chris cast.
Yeah. That's the Chris cast. It's a different podcast that we do. It's called Chris cast. We take a deep dive
into your level of honesty.
Yes.
The level of honesty you're willing to share per episode.
Yeah.
You're watching that? Oh my God. Yeah. Like it's just, that's what I'm hearing.
Okay.
Like, my
it's a mix, you know, it's a classic mix of Chris's feelings and eroticism, you know? So I mean, it's just, you know, it's erotic feelings.
The ratio of that erotic
way off.
Mixed with truth.
Way off.
I understand to a degree because I, as I'm the one that posts for us on Letterboxd, I will rewatch like a classic and like give it a rating. And then I'll watch like some total piece of garbage. And then I realize I gave it the same rating as that other classic. And I'm like, huh, am I giving a very confusing, you know, it's like, but they are equal to me in some weird way, but I don't know if this is how people are benefiting from it. But anyway,
Ryan, they can hear you.
The Blu-rays,
they can hear you.
They can hear me. Here's the Letterboxd synopsis, and it's very, very short, which is unusual for Letterboxd, but extremely unusual for ChatGPT. It says, femme fatale martial arts expert teaches the mafia a lesson.
Mm. Wait, what? That's it?
That's it.
Oh.
I object to the word mafia. I feel like there were no Italians.
Yeah. No,
none of these guys
no.
were Italian. Mm-mm. You know, I mean, not that there is a mafia. It's that's something made up, to, you know, to the slur against Italian Americans. But you know, if it were like these, this would none of these guys were Italian. I mean, it may be organized crime.
Yes, organized crime.
I mean, you don't want to paint with that brush, you know.
I'm not 100%. She teaches them a lesson, but
no, I would argue no she lessons, taught sorry. A member of their organized crime group a lesson.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the rest of the group, the cops just got.
Yeah.
Or her friend, Ray, as we'll get to. He also taught. He probably taught the organized crime group a lesson.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
She teaches one guy, really just gets revenge on one guy. But, you know, the sad thing for that synopsis to me is that it's like, if you read that, I don't think you're going to go, well, let's watch that. You know, it's not particularly enticing.
And to be fair, the ChatGPT review would you'd have the same the same emotional response. You'd say, skip that one.
No, I would say the difference is you might go, psh, what does ChatGPT know? Put it on.
That's fair.
Yeah. Let's prove it wrong.
Yeah.
You don't tell me what to watch, robot.
Not let Skynet pick my movies.
AI doesn't tell us what to watch. Let's put on Netflix.
Oh, Ryan, that was really good. That was really good. Wow.
All right, we start off right away at the arena. That's what I love about this movie is that it dives right in.
We start off right away with a fucking banger of a soundtrack.
Yeah, that's true. Like,
this soundtrack from Susan Justin and Paul Fox, like from scene one, I was like, I am into this.
It's great.
I don't care what I'm watching. I want to listen to this soundtrack. Yeah. So this thing starts off, I was in from minute one.
Oh, for sure. Oh, for sure. I actually want to mention that we actually start with this very interesting, like cusp 70s, 80s New World logo.
Oh,
like,
I hadn't seen
this one.
Yeah, with the three New World pictures kind of coming together,
Yeah, and it's like, you know, this came out in 1981, and it's interesting because, like, I think movies that come out as the decade is changing have sort of, like, one foot in each decade, and you can kind of feel it with the logo. It's like, oh, you know, the 70s were starting to wane, but the 80s, they didn't quite know what they were going to look like yet, so it's like, oh, it's this... It's a real interest, like the Arsenio Hall show of New World logo.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love how much you thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even think about it. God, what a thick loaf of bread I am. I didn't even think about it. That's so true. That's a great point.
It's a New World logo before it really gets a catchphrase in like an arm movement that it can really rally a crowd.
Right. Right.
But while we do start in, we actually do start in all three of these things.
That's true.
in the arena. As we watched coiffed Chuck Norris lookalike character, we later learn his name, Chuck Donner. Very different, though. Very different from Chuck Norris. Chuck is played by Darby Hinton. He's a child actor who appeared in the TV series Daniel Boone, but had just appeared in director Graydon Clark's Without Warning in 1981. Speaking of Clark, that is to say Graydon Clark, Hinton had also appeared in Angel's Brigade for the director, which was released by New World Pictures, and also New World's Black Oak Conspiracy. Who did he play on Black Oak Conspiracy? I mean, we covered it on this show. I don't know, and I don't remember. I don't remember that movie.
You know, until you've occasionally brought up that movie as we've done this podcast, and only when you bring it up that is it, only in the moments you bring it up, do I remember we watched that movie?
Mm-hmm. Welcome to my world, brothers. I could barely tell you what we watched for this episode. So welcome to it.
For some reason, that movie is one that in all the annals of movies that we watched, that's one I consistently forget that we actually watched.
And it's got the coolest name. Like my side.
Oh, it's got a great name.
For sure.
My band is Black.
And a great poster.
It's like that movie is like the movie Memento. It's like I keep writing it into our notes going like, I'll remember it if I write it in. And the more I keep bringing it up, I'm like, I don't remember. I just don't remember it.
Mm-hmm. Remember Sammy Jenkins? No, remember Black Oak Conspiracy.
I'm not writing down crucial stuff, trying to remember Black Oak Conspiracy, but it just will not. It just will not trigger.
I know I listened to that episode, but I couldn't tell you what it was about. I just can't remember. I just can't. It's gone.
There was a car crash in the beginning, and that's as far as I remember.
Yeah.
I remember that I was fucking hilarious.
It's a great episode.
Everybody's takeaway. Did you hear that, ChatGPT? Erica was fucking hilarious on episode whatever, Black Oak Conspiracy. Number who knows.
Hey, I'm trying to sleep here.
Is that the one where he was a stuntman?
I don't think
so. No one knows.
I don't think so, but... I can't tell you what he was.
That was the car wrecked down into like a ravine. Ooh. Or like a...
That's like half the movies we
watch.
That's like half the movies we watch.
Is hand motion help?
Of the ravine, of the car? Is that the ravine or the car? The
car went down in there. Remember there was like a shootout in there? In the ravine?
That is like so many movies from New World in the 70s. I could not tell you. Anyway, we do get into our title sequence, which I only bring up because is this not the greatest title sequence you've ever seen?
Yes.
Well, yeah, I love title sequences that show me the object that the movie is titled after.
Thank you.
Yes.
In this case, Firecracker. And it's just, it's firecrackers going off. Like, who'd thunk it? But I gotta back up here. I gotta back up to this tournament because I had a moment that was revelatory watching this. Because I'm watching this and I'm like, it's great. Oh, cool. Oh, nunchucks. Okay, another guy with a knife on a pole. And then, I don't even know his name yet, but the blonde character, it's Chuck. We'll come to know him as Chuck. But I see the back of his gi. And it is this lion. And oh my God. It is the greatest thing I've ever seen. I need the whole wardrobe. My God.
It is amazing. He wears a different version of that jacket later where it still has the lion on it, but
I know
it's just amazing.
And by the way, this guy with his hair and his facial expressions during this fight, I swear to God, he's the inspiration for Ben Stiller's character in Dodgeball.
That is a good call.
That's a great call.
Yeah.
After this title sequence, we get a quick plane landing and a hotel check-in, and we see Jillian Kessner be marked by some ruffians and battle some would-be thieves in her bedroom. Now, I just want to ask, because we see her do this fight sequence. We've only seen her from a title sequence doing some martial arts moves with the firecrackers blowing up.
Yeah.
Just by the way, to give any reason why this movie is called Firecracker, there's really no other reason other than the title sequence. But,
she's a firecracker.
Yeah, that's just who she is.
She's a firecracker.
But do you think Jillian Kessner is someone that knows the martial arts?
Well, the trailer would have you believe that.
Yes, mm-hmm. Right.
But that was not what my research turned up.
Oh, no. What did your research turn up?
My research turned up that, in fact, while she would eventually get her black belt, at the time this movie was shot, she had only taken a single martial arts class.
Wow. Hmm.
Only one? And only she was that one. Good? Wow.
She's really good. Like, she's really good.
She's really good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I gotta take a martial arts class.
The trailer would make you think she's like a world champion, and that I don't believe was the case.
Well, in my research, I found a 1982 article in the Philadelphia Daily News.
It's a research off. Brace yourselves. It's a research off. We got
don't
to.
Don't worry. I have some research after Ryan. So the research off is fully on.
It's a three-way research off.
Wow.
According to this article in the Philadelphia Daily News.
Thank you for knowing, Chris, that I did zero research. Love you for
There's still time for it to be a four-way.
It would align with the eroticism of this movie if I just threw in a little sexy research at the end.
No, that's a fight. That's not sexy. Oh. That's a fight. That's a fight right. Waiting to happen.
All right.
The article says that Kessner had been training in Yayan, a Filipino discipline of martial arts that apparently is close to Muay Thai. Oh. She even has a quote because she's been doing more... She has been working out like choreographed movie fighting, but she studied more forms. And in fact, she said, in my class in L.A., we fight, but it's my least favorite part of martial arts. I like the forms, rigid exercises and drills. And when we have tests, you can't screw up even once. Oof. So that is what she says about her martial arts-ness.
It would serve her well. I mean, she stayed in the Philippines. She made Raw Force right after this.
She does make Raw Force right after this. Yeah, that's what. In fact, she was on the Raw Force publicity tour when she made that. When she talked about her martial arts prowess, she said she'd been in classes for about 3 years at that point in time. But I mean, you said she'd only had one class before this, so
was split
it
the difference?
3 years? Was it 2 years? Who knows? Who knows?
Could have been 6 months. It's you know, we'll split the difference. You know, it's all, you know, who's ever to know?
But she's looking for a sister, or is she? Because she doesn't do much investigating.
Nope. Not really.
No, not really.
She does this much. She finds out where her sister was sort of living, and she goes to this bar with her friends that she gets an address from.
Yeah.
And it's her, and she makes some new pals with Ray and Peter the bartender, and they fight off
Pete
the bartender. Yep. And they fight off some guys who just, you know, start a fight. I don't want to say ChatGPT was right about that, but here we are.
She's been in the country 2 days and
she's had two fights,
one in her hotel room, in the first hotel room. And then she goes to where her sister was. She goes up to the room and then comes back, and it's like a comically hard cut to the bar, just in absolute pandemonium.
Right,
it's amazing.
I'm not
ChatGPT's public defender, but with a name like Firecracker, there's gonna be a lot of fights, right? Yeah, so sure. I mean, I can't blame ChatGPT for getting that one right.
We don't know if that initial fight wasn't even a part of just her part of the check-in package that she got at the hotel. It might have been.
She got the rough and tumble check-in.
I see that you got. You beat me to it.
That's why I always ask for the executive breakfast check-in. It's a lot different. Doesn't involve.
Did you call in for late check-in? No, I called in for beat my ass in the hotel room check-in.
The executive breakfast, you're just fighting over that omelet stand.
Uh-huh. But back off, bitch. I was already here.
The bar is in the middle of a fight for no good reason.
No reason. Yeah.
To show a
fight. Right, right. That bar was just poorly located. A fight was already happening. Yeah. It just happened.
Yeah.
Bro, it got into the bar, was just there in the wrong place at the wrong time. But she does start to learn.
The bar's fault.
She does learn her first clue about her sister while she's at the bar.
What makes you think she's in trouble?
She told me. She said she couldn't explain it on the phone.
She's probably out visiting some friends.
Couldn't be that. She said she had a big story.
Let me see that. Chuck Donner.
Who's he?
He's bad news.
Where can I find him?
Works down the arena for Eric Stollard. Drugs, prostitution, gambling. I don't think you want to meet him.
Guess again.
If you told me that that clip was taken from a LP read-along book where it told you to turn the page at a certain point, I would believe you. Because there's a lot of crackling happening in the background there.
Yeah, they make up for the lack of room tone by just crackling. They recorded this near a roaring fire.
I just love that she's been missing for weeks, long enough that her sister would send a telegram. And the right. And Pete dismisses of, oh, she must have gone to see some friends.
Right. The middle of that clip, though, and this movie just moves so fast, but the middle of that clip, they're actually in a dark room, which also tells me that in this bar where fights just happen to happen near, they also have a working dark room.
They have a working dark room.
Just there. Wow.
Yeah.
Pete is suspect also number one. In my,
yeah,
why
for
was
sure.
she not questioning the shit out of him? What friends? She's just he's not taking this serious. I'm like, he is suspicious.
Suspicious.
She also forgets. They just tell her right off the bat, this guy is bad news. He's into drugs. He's a really bad person. And she's like, let me meet him.
Yeah. He's into drugs. He's a bad person. He's got feathered hair. He's wearing bangs. I don't know. Don't do it.
I don't think you want to meet that perm. She's like, no, I think I do.
Yeah.
I just want to also mention the fact that this bar is a San Francisco-themed bar in the Philippines, which that's got to be novel. That's got to be, unique.
Yeah.
Nothing but rice-a-roni served all the time.
It's
Ghirardelli chocolate.
It's
just, everywhere you go in San Francisco.
They take it real seriously.
They have rice-a-roni people on the corners with bowls.
It's throwing it. Throwing
warm
it.
Rice. Warm pilaf for you everywhere you go.
It's the San Francisco treat, everyone. Get into it.
Why do you think it's called the tenderloin?
Whoa!
Yeah, yeah. You bet.
Whoa, I don't even know what that means.
Better with a steak? Honestly. What goes better with a steak?
Then rice-a-roni and some Ghirardelli chocolate.
Come on.
Mm-hmm. Swill that down. Wash that down with some anchor steam. All right? It's that's real San Francisco vibe.
Yeah. At one point in time, you could.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
Back then, you could.
Yep, back then you could. By the way, Pete the Bartender is played by Pete Cooper, who played Nyberg, the harbor master in Up From the Depths, and apparently is also in Stryker in an unspecified role in IMDb.
He's one of the guys who's dancing in the rain at the end.
Wow. Who could tell? Ray is played by Ray Malonzo, who had appeared in a series of Filipino Bruce Lee clone movies in the late
70s. Yeah, I could see that.
And then he would go on to become mayor of his hometown in the Philippines for three straight terms, and then is now looking to potentially join Congress in the Philippines. So he's had a political career.
Well, how about
okay.
that?
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
How many times do you think they bust his balls about this movie when he gets his campaign team together? They're like, wait, we got a new commercial for you. And they drop in clips from this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's got to happen all the time.
Every
right?
single ad of his starts with firecrackers, and they're just like, oh, shit.
Here we go.
And honestly, all you can do is lean into it.
Susie, though, goes and meets Chuck, who puts her to a test and is impressed enough to take her on a date. All at the order of his boss, Eric, as
Eric.
Chris mentioned. Eric, the evil, the bad guy, Eric.
Daddy.
Eric. Played by screenwriter Ken Metcalf, who also appeared in Up From the Depths and CoverGirl Models and every New World movie shot in the Philippines, except the ones that Jack Hill directed, but he's in all the other ones. While Chuck may be wooed by Susie, however, Eric is not convinced about her, nor is Grip, played by Filipino acting legend Vic Diaz, who again is in all these movies.
I missed Vic Diaz's name in the opening credits. So then I'm watching the scene in the arena and I'm like, is that Vic Diaz? And then I was like, oh, maybe he was just there, or maybe he's playing himself. But no, he's playing an actual role. Can we talk for a second about the arena that Eric owns? Because this venue, it's part martial arts venue, part nightclub. Like, presumably the actual arena that we see at the opening sequence and later is attached to it. But there's also this area that's like, it's got a stage. It's like a mm-hmm. nightclub. You have martial arts demonstrations going on, presumably mixed with more traditional nightclub acts. Because mm-hmm. that would be amazing. It's like, oh, here we have a samurai and a ninja battling to the death, followed by the comedy of Henny Youngman. Like, it's that's a night out.
Yep, that's a night out. That's some middle-aged eroticism right there. because that's value. Because that's the value for that
value
ticket.
For money.
That ticket, that's a lot of value.
That's a 2-for-1. That's a savings.
It's a 3-for-2.
When they first show you that club, there's like a woman on... essentially like a Mr. Toad's Wild Ride type platform with Christmas lights on it going around. Yes, then you have like an amusement ride.
They're blinking very fast.
Right. And then in the end, everyone's sitting on a stage like it's medieval times, but you're watching people fight to the death.
Yes.
Like, I mean, I got to be honest, I could get into this.
Honestly.
This exists. I'm open for a night just to check it out.
They open that up in Van Nuys, I'm going.
Do you think she's clean?
Yeah, she's fine. She doesn't want to cause problems for anyone.
Yeah, well, she better not.
She wants to work here.
Screw her!
I intend to, but that's not the point. Look, Humpty Dumpty here might not think so, but I think she could add some color to the games and the club.
I'll think about it.
Why don't you give her a break? She could use the money.
We got enough problems without worrying about getting some female karate expert a job.
Okay.
I intend to. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking about CoverGirl models, you guys remember the guy in that movie who wore some high collars and did some really gross kissing in it? In that movie?
Yeah,
that's right.
Is that a Black Hole conspiracy?
I don't know. Maybe. I can't remember. Tony Ferrer is back in this, guys. This time playing a cop, and he grabs Susie at a outdoor market, and he asks her to back off from finding her sister, and she says,
"Okay, I'll stay out of your way."
Because, I mean, she's not really bothering to look for her sister. Mm-hmm. So what's the... That's an easy give.
Okay. This is where we got to talk about TNT Jackson a little bit. Because this is one of the things that really separates. Because a lot of these are similar beats. And in TNT Jackson, there's a moment where TNT, who is the main character, finds out that another character is a cop. And that cop... you know, it tells her to kind of, you know, back off. I don't want you to screw up the case. And TNT is like, TNT doesn't work with pigs. Whereas in this movie, Suzanne is like, yes, officer, whatever you say.
Yep.
Like, there's a very different vibe.
Yeah.
Very different. There's then a drug deal that goes down and Chuck is stealing from his own boss.
That parade, though.
What?
My God, the parade with the paper mache Roman soldier heads?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What? I want to go to that.
Well, I'm talking about the one at the water where they have the
dam. Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's actually really great.
It's actually a really cool scene. Yeah.
Really well done.
And when Vic Diaz has to go back and tell Eric that he lost the shipment, boy, does he get an earful.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's so funny. I took a clip of the same thing.
You know damn well I don't like being disturbed when I'm ranking the fighters.
I know, boss, I know. But this is important.
It damn well better be.
We lost the shipment.
What? The shipment?
My men murdered. Not the trace who did it.
How did it happen? No, never mind. I don't want to know how. I want to know why. Now you get your ass out on the street. Talk to every Tom, Dick, and Harry. Check on your faces. I want that shipment back. And I want the bastards who rip me off.
Okay, I just have to quickly interject. I took a clip of the exact same thing because I was thinking, okay, think about this, your grip. Grip's working with other people. They work under him. He's the boss to them. And they're all like, oh, fuck, you got to go talk to the boss. Tell him about this shipment.
Right.
So they're like, oh, God, I hope it's okay. I hope it's okay. Grip goes in, has the conversation, walks out. Presumably all his buddies are waiting outside the door. They're like, oh, God, well, how'd he take it? Did he just lose his shit? Was he so pissed? And Grip would just be like, I don't know. I mean, he's not happy.
No,
but right. He's also asking about the why, not the how.
Don't bother him when he's ranking fighters. He doesn't want to be bothered when he's ranking fighters. That's what's really important.
I walk out so confused. Like, is he so mad he can't express it? Or does he really? I don't know. What's my motivation at this point?
He's so annoyed and mad, he raised his voice just ever so slightly. That's about what he does. And so we will learn later that Eric is actually pulling a double cross. And yes. Chuck is on here now. I don't really know how they're doing a double cross. They eventually, they're out to get Grip, who I guess is not. I don't know. And I don't really care. It doesn't matter because there's so that we have about maybe 3 minutes tops of these gangster guys. I still clipped a couple scenes because they happen to be very, you know, amusing. But the fact is like they're not hardly in the movie. And then all of a sudden they have this end scene where he's like, I had to double cross everybody. Don't worry about it. I knew about it the whole time. And I'm like, how, why? I don't know. Who cares at this point? You know, there's so much that happens by the time they resolve the storyline. You don't even know what's happening. it's crazy.
Also, you would think that maybe that's genius that he handled that situation so sort of like feigning anger because he knows what the deal is, and so he's like, I'm just gonna like not show too much emotion but still, oh, I'm so pissed, oh, go get him. But every line he delivers is just like that,
is the same. Is the same.
I have to wonder if it is the fact that, because we have a scene where his girlfriend, who we later learn is an undercover cop, is just getting ready a dose of heroin for him to, like, she's just getting ready to and just so casually, as like, oh, well, I guess that's why he's,
and you gotta imagine when as soon as he gets that shot, he goes, wow, I am really high.
Yeah.
I am absolutely high right now in this moment.
I am fucked up.
Maybe she was his caregiver. It's just some vitamin B.
You always pour vitamin B in a spoon first. That's how you give the vitamin B.
Well, I don't know. I'm keeping an open mind.
It's good.
Yeah.
And what he says, it's so funny. In that scene, he says that I'm perfectly capable of taking care of things myself. But she's putting together the heroin for him and he can't even inject it himself. Right. I'm like, that's the example of not being able to take care of things yourself at all.
No.
Mark, you get yourself to a certain level and, you know, you distribute the duties amongst your staff and, you know, if you're smart
delegate, Mark, delegate.
If you're smart enough, you don't have to do a thing.
Yeah.
Other than watch your fighters.
Yeah.
You gotta rank those fighters.
I'm gonna have people brushing my hair, brushing my teeth, putting my deodorant on for me, wiping my butt. You know, get a guest wiper. Then you know you've made it.
It's true.
So, listeners, what you just heard from me was what they call small thinking.
That's right. So, think bigger, Mark.
Think bigger.
Susie is invited to spar with Chuck when he walks her around, I guess, the fighter's compound that is behind the San Francisco, the arena. I don't know. Like the Enter the Dragon-like compound that they have. Yeah.
Oh, it's like where they're training, like ninjas training in a James Bond film. It's fantastic. And honestly, she has got a jumpsuit of every color in this movie. And, you know, she pulls them all off very nicely. Like it's...
Yeah. Then she wins her, basically by doing this exhibition, she wins the right to watch a match at the arena, which is nice.
Which she immediately takes a dislike to.
Yeah. And then they're like, yeah, because they were like, yeah, these fights go to the death. What do you think about that? She's like, well, I don't want to do that.
Honestly, it's a very, very reasonable reaction.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think I'm interested then. And then she takes off on a taxi and, this is
she supposed to be looking for her sister at this point?
I mean, again, the sister thing, I don't think she's ever, she's lucky. The friends, sometimes it's about the friends. Maybe this movie's about the friends you make. Because really, like, they can.
The real sister now, is the friends we made along the way.
Eric is delegating the heroin job to his assistant. Yeah. And Susie is delegating finding her sister to all of her friends and colleagues that mm-hmm. she meets along the way. Because she's yeah. doing zero to find. But she goes, she takes a taxi right away from the arena. She goes, and this is the section that is shot by Alan Holzman at the lumber yard where she, because on Roger's orders, because in TNT Jackson, there is some naked fighting.
Yeah.
But there's not in this so far. And that is until this scene where she has some guys attack her, and they keep cutting off a piece of clothing at each stage.
The first one is like a fence, a chain link fence kind of grabs the bottom of her skirt, and then it gets progressive from there.
And this is, I guess, why they were like, ooh, we can really call this an erotic kung fu film.
It's also like 45 minutes into the movie, so you have to like the kung fu part first.
Well, first of all, the fact that the two guys accosting her don't seem to have anything to do with the disappearance of her sister. They're just random dudes.
Yeah.
And yet they're
also random white dudes.
Random white dudes who murder a security guard in this. Right. Like, there's a very ill-placed scythe on the ground, and then like the security guard who's trying to defend her falls into it, and then the guy just pushes her. I'm like, okay, these guys, I mean, they're just out for a walk and they decided to murder a dude. Like, holy shit.
There's a lot of murder. Speaking of, she had just left this arena going, I'm not interested in a fight to the death, but I will kill these two dudes in bloody fashion. Granted, they start it and they attack her. It's not something that was premeditated, but I mean, she definitely.
But wasn't this also after Eric's told her that if you're a great fighter, you have to do it to the death? Like, it's the only way.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
this scene, to me, I was like, oh, this is validating that even though she's saying no, that is in her.
A true fighter fights to kill. Otherwise, it's only a game.
Thank you.
Wow. Thank you, Chuck. Chris. Yes. Thank you. I mean, God, that's a t-shirt.
Yeah. But like, she's running at this point, she's running around in her bra and panties. She's fighting the dudes. Like, mm-hmm. she kicks a guy into a table saw and turns it on. And then the guy's face goes into the saw. I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, it's something.
Some great stuff from Alan Holzman. We go on to the other drug deal that Chris mentioned.
Odds are he would have just hit the shield that goes over the saw and Mark, it would have done anything
Mark.
I mean, save
that for the Samantha cast, Mark. Come on.
She eventually is entirely topless. And I just, the cleverness of she's standing in front of a box that says Rackmaster.
Yep.
Yes, I noticed that too.
I felt like that was on purpose.
Oh, yeah.
I felt like
that's not an accident.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We go on to the other drug dealer Chris was talking about. This time, Susie's there to watch it, and then she rides off on a motorcycle. She's chased by Eric's main squeeze, Mallow, and she instantly falls off the side of the road.
Just right off.
Like, instantly. Yeah. Like, she's never ridden a motorcycle before. But she does learn a terrifying secret.
I'm Malu Suarez, Lieutenant JG, undercover, Narcotics Division, Anti-Narcotics Unit. Policewoman. And you're Susanna Carter. Born October 17, Augusta, Georgia. Physical education graduate from UCLA. Sixth Dan black belt. Undefeated karate champion. And you're here looking for your sister Bonnie, alias Vanessa Goodman. There's a whole lot more if you're interested.
That terrifying secret. There are police women. There, are that's
police
the secret.
Woman.
There's police women, guys. Who would
unprecedented.
Have guessed? Susie's search for her sister finally does resume and instantly ends when the police show her her sister's body.
Yep.
Or so you have to guess, because we don't see the body. In fact, we see this, when I watch this yet again, we see the sister in the very, very beginning watching the opening fight for 5 seconds.
Yeah.
She's mm-hmm, like,
yeah. She got a camera. She's clicking she's some pictures.
Pictures.
Yeah.
That's it. She gets pulled up and we never see her again. Yeah. Never. Nope. We don't see nope. pictures of her. We don't see the, she is. And even when they pull the sheet, we don't see her. He says that he has to show her something and he thinks it's her sister while they're in the hallway, and a shot where they're walking down the hallway. And then once they kind of turn in, that's when the focus hits them, because they only yeah. focus to where they get closer yeah. to the camera.
What's interesting is she finds out that her sister's dead 54 minutes into this movie. Now,
yeah.
with TNT Jackson, TNT actually learns that her brother's dead about 23 minutes into that movie.
Oh.
And then it gives her the motivation of she's going to get vengeance, and that drives her for the rest of the film. Here, you don't have that, so you spend the middle part of the movie kind of listless as other people are looking into other things, and you know, she's going on dates with Cody Aberle. You know, it's
yeah. I mean, that's the thing. They told her in the beginning of the movie, this guy's no good. She finds out her sister's dead. She immediately runs to him, like
yes.
distraught.
Yes.
It's like,
I was going to ask, in TNT Jackson at 23 minutes when she finds out her brother's dead, is besides the initial shock, is her next emotional response being super horny?
Well, she is naked in a bathtub when she gets
okay.
that news.
Okay, fair.
But she doesn't. I mean, and there are things that play similarly in TNT Jackson, but because the movie's structured a little differently, they kind of have different meanings at different times.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so, because in this one it's meaningless.
Yeah, that's yeah.
it doesn't do anything.
TNT Jackson has a modicum of meaning. Yes,
right. Yeah, this one it doesn't matter. But what we do get is arguably one of the greatest scenes.
Oh my god!
And New World history, but certainly of this film, and that is when she goes in and runs into Chuck's arms and knives as she comes to him for comfort, and he proceeds to cut her clothes to bits. And this dual clothes-cutting seduction scene, added again by Alan Holzman, with Susan adding Susan Justin, his wife, and adding a tender piano ballad as the background. I cannot watch a scene without going like, I hope they have an extra set of clothes, because they're cutting these clothes. Like, eventually, you will need to put on some clothes. I mean, it will eventually. You'll need to put and they're gone now. They're just ribbons.
I mean, Chuck has got a pretty sweet sex pad there. I mean, he's got mirrors yeah. on the ceilings.
Mirrors on the ceiling.
He's got special mm-hmm. sex lighting, which admittedly is red and yellow, which is odd. Like, that's an yep. odd set of colors for sex lighting. Like, oh, you look jaundiced. How sexy. It's just very, very odd. Here's the thing is, she's emotionally vulnerable. Wouldn't this be the time for, like, something tender, as opposed to I'm gonna ginsu your pants off, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like, it's so, I'm not trying to kink shame here, but like, you know, she's grieving, maybe a lighter touch.
Yeah,
right. I think he knew damn well she needed like something to just be like, I have no idea what's happening right now.
Yeah,
I mean, nothing's gonna
true.
Take your mind off.
I mean, she hits him,
I mean,
she hits him and knocks him to the floor.
She does
and,
hit him,
and he's into it. He's into
yeah,
it.
Oh, he's totally into it. He's
shit.
Like, that was the response I was looking for.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah he's got that rotisserie yeah. chicken lighting on. He's ready to go.
Oh, God. All of his lion clothing is just the best. I can't get past that.
Oh, it's so good.
Oh.
Susie finds out from Mallow that it was Chuck who killed her sister. Again, thanks to all of Mallow's detective work. Thank God she's on the case.
She doesn't do anything to learn this. She's
zero
just told
detective.
It. Like, in TNT Jackson, it's similar. She learns that the guy she just slept with did kill her brother, but she learns it herself. She's not just told the information.
Susie is guided from fight to fight, from clue to clue without her having to really even try, you know?
No!
And again, if she was paying attention when she was watching the drug deal go down, if she paid attention to her friends telling her, all signs are leading to Chuck from the get-go. This movie is not hiding. If there's, this movie is not subtle in any way about anything at any time. And she's just like, what? Chuck? She has to see the bracelet in his room and go, he's the one. Like, of course he was the one. What has everyone been telling you? And what has every sign been pointing to the whole movie?
What, from the minute they developed...
He's not the bastard you are.
That's right, Susie. Take a look at yourself, maybe, you dumb.
But to be fair, she's had to fucking fight, like, nonstop.
Every day in the Philippines another fight.
How much investigating can you do when you're fucking faced with a fight every time you turn around?
You're just exhausted. One-fifth of them have to do with the search for her sister. Most of them are just random fights that she comes across.
Yeah.
Yes.
Honestly, ChatGPT had it right. Holy shit. I never thought I'd say that.
Fuck. Shit. Are we going to start putting that on the poster? Fights just happen out of nowhere, ChatGPT. Like, oh, fuck. ChatGPT didn't like this one. I don't know. But anyway, she doesn't do much detective work, but she does find everything else out. But what she does do is call for a death match at the arena. Yep. And she gets her wish and her target in Chuck.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, while Susie and Chuck death match away, Ray shows up to fight everyone else.
Everyone else. After Chuck tries to kill Grip in the clumsiest assassination attempt I've ever seen. Like, Grip is walking out of room. He has no idea. And, does Chuck just show up behind him and shoot him in the back of the head, Goodfellas style? No, he leaps in front of him with two knives and leads to a whole other thing where I'm like, you could have just done this two shots and that would have been it. You know, like, what are you doing, Chuck? Come on. Yeah.
But after using those knives to cut off Susie's clothes, he was feeling lucky.
I guess. You don't even deserve that lion wardrobe.
You have the coolest clothes in the whole city, just, and you just...
don't even deserve them, man.
You don't deserve them.
Sad. Sad. Oh,
I think it's that time.
I agree. I think it's time for things we loved and things we hi-yah!
That's right. We're going to talk about the things we love and the things we hated about Firecracker. Mark, what's something you loved?
I love that when Susie packed up to go to the Philippines, she packed a lot of jumpers. A
lot of.
Because she knew.
Every color.
I need the flexibility.
Right.
And, you know, whether it's a dinner party or a lunch date, a jumper will work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She had one dress. She had another outfit, which we'll get to later. And then nothing but jumpers. And I really love that about her. This is a person that came prepared. And now she didn't come prepared to find her sister.
No.
But she came prepared with an ensemble of clothes that I felt really worked.
Yeah. Well, yeah. She didn't come prepared also for the humidity or.
You don't know,
sister,
those could be, they could have little vents, they could breathe, be, they could be the kind, you know, like, could be like eco-tourism jumpers, you know, could turn to shorts at any moment.
Well, I got into that business.
But maybe that was the telegram she got from her sister, was like, I need you to come over here, but also, here's what you need to pack.
Yeah.
Right. We never learned what's actually in the telegram.
Right. She spent like $100 on this telegram because it's an extensive list. This is a lot.
It's going down here. Also, if you come here, pack these things.
Yeah. Chris, what did you love?
I loved Chuck Donner's wardrobe. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Like, it's just the lions, the consistency of apparel iconography, the likes of which we have not seen since Laverne DeFazio. Like, this dude's so vibe was amazing. He wasn't really threatening, but holy shit, his vibe was amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, so true.
That, so true.
Those jackets, like, man.
Oh, yeah. So good.
Erica, what did you love?
We talked about it already, but I love the music. The music was great. It was catchy. It was at times hilarious. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, I couldn't believe it was happening. Because I'm like, I don't know what's happening in this movie, but damn it. Woo! This music. Like, yeah. I'm feeling this.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's good. I mean, when they did sort of a, so like a detuned version of Planet Claire at one point in the soundtrack. Yeah. I was
during
like,
during the fight strip scene.
Chef's kiss. Yeah. That is amazing.
For me, I loved Jillian Kessner's stunt double. There's several scenes where you see the stunt double. And when you see the stunt double, you can't miss the stunt double, I'll tell you that. But there's also this particular moment that Susie's taking a horse-driven carriage ride, by the way, to snoop on Chuck while he jogs, which is like, totally, it's so inconspicuous. She'll never notice me in this horse-drawn carriage. It's just, you just blend into the background when you do that. It's just, you know, you can't be seen.
Ryan, I have watched you jog many times from a horse-driven carriage.
And I've never known. I've never known. Then she's kidnapped and she's given the shakedown by Grip at the arena, who unleashes a snake on her for Suzanne to like jump on the top rope of the fighting arena and then throw the snake on Grip. And of course, we see, you can see it several times, but that's where I was like, oh, stunt double. Oh, sweet stunt double. How amazing is this trick? Probably done in reverse, but nevertheless. And just the fact that there was a move to be like, he's going to have a snake to like bite her, but she'll just do this trick and jump on the rope and then throw the snake at him. It's just, it's a wonderful blend of just like, of cool ideas mixed with like, I don't know what I'm doing and I'm out of my depth, which is the kind of cinema that I love.
Yeah.
Well, also in that scene, you could make the argument that if you bring a highly deadly snake into a confrontation and you say, tell me the truth or I'm going to let the snake out, and it's one of the most deadly snakes in all of the Philippines.
Yes, which are the deadliest snakes in
when
the world.
The most deadly snakes in the world. You're right. When you take that snake out of the box, everyone is at risk, including the person that brought the snake. Right? Like, I would be, as a recipient of that news, be like, but do you want to get close to the snake? Because you have to open the door.
Right.
All right, let's switch to things we hated. Mark, what did you hate?
So I hated that Suzanne, she travels all this way, right? And, you know, she, after finding out her sister's dead, the first thing she does is go and meet up with Chuck and have this incredible clothes cutting scene, which I did love, but I'm going to get to what I hated. What I hated was that was the worst outfit she ever wore. Mm. And I was really pleased that that was the one that got cut up and not all the jumpers.
Yeah.
So that we didn't have to see her in that again.
Maybe
it was the scene I loved and the scene I hated all at once. I don't know. I can't tell.
Chris, what did you hate?
I hate that I don't own Chuck Donner's wardrobe.
There's some parallels here, Chris.
But actually, seriously, I kind of hate, especially in comparison to TNT Jackson, I kind of hate that the protagonist in this film kind of gets robbed of her agency. Like they kind of just forget that she's just wandering the city, getting into fights, forgetting about the fact that her sister is missing. And it's just, and in comparison to TNT Jackson, which is in a lot of ways a very similar movie, but there is a much more, like, you have a character with drive and a propulsive narrative that is much more cohesive. And you know, honestly, they kind of, you know, it's not necessarily the best version of the story.
Mm. Fair. It's true. Erica, what did you hate?
What I hated the most was just trying to keep track of what was happening in this movie. I really, a lot of times was confused. and struggled to know what was happening at times. I told Ryan that when we watched it. I don't think I understand what's happening or what's going on. And you were like, yep.
This is one of those things that, like, Roger would cut the, you know, his movies and trim them down a lot. And there was a quote that I read that John Sayles, when he said, like, his script for Battle Beyond the Stars was, like, super long because it was, like, you wrote a lot of dialogue. They weren't sure at the time whether or not the effects were going to work. So they're like, let's have a lot of characters talking and stuff. And, like, I think, like, that's kind of general thought of Rogers. Like, sure, we have all this, you know, character interactions and chatting. And then, but if, like, the action works, we can trim all that to nothing. But the action here is so fast and so quick. You were like, I don't know what's happening. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I'm not 100%. And you end up having to, like, I rewound it several times too. And I've already seen it several times. I'm like, wait, so how exactly did he get? And it's like, it's covered with maybe a line. And, like, this is also not a movie that's made for you to like look it over with this kind of fine tooth comb. It's made to just be shown at a drive-in where you're not supposed to pay attention to the story. And I guess that's kind of the point, but.
Yeah, it has the plotting complexity of, like, Boardwalk Empire, but it's just, it ain't that kind of thing.
Not that kind of movie. That kind of movie. I mean, again, I think we lost that whole storyline with the criminals that they just must have just chopped out. They're like, who cares? And they're not wrong. I mean, that's the thing about Roger was very smart about how he cut the movies. And I think it was probably, like, a lot of the Filipino productions that are cut in the Philippines sent over. And then Alan Holzman shoots these two scenes to insert. And I think he did another cut. And I'm sure that Roger had a bunch of notes for him to, like, trim that out, trim the, you know, beginning and ends of each scene. Because the movie is not long. It's like under 80 minutes. It's not a long movie. And a ton happens.
Yeah.
Except for any actual detective work. Other than that, there's a ton of things that happen.
And I'll say it, TNT Jackson is a shorter movie. It does have a similar plot with the two guys, you know, vying for this criminal empire. And I followed it more clearly. Like, it's the more clear of the two pictures.
Yeah. It's like TNT Jackson is 5 minutes shorter. That's 72 minutes. Yeah. It's weird to watch a movie that's 77 minutes and just be like, I am kind of lost. It's like, it shouldn't be. Why is it so jam packed with stuff?
Yeah. I was like, why can't I keep up with this? There's not much.
Yeah. And it's a simple story that they're like, but let's complicate it. So
I have to admit, there were many of those scenes where I was like, I don't really get what's happening. And my brain just went, Mark,
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
It's fine.
But that's the thing. It's like, you're like, I don't get what this is, but also I don't think I care. And also I don't think the filmmakers care. And we're all right. Yeah. All of us are right.
Yeah.
Like, but let's go to our favorite scene. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
So my favorite scene is the scene that was shot at the lumberyard. But more specifically, there's one part of it that I really appreciated. And I want to just kind of explain why. You run into anybody that's a master of anything is going to have a weakness at some point. Like, you could be an astrophysicist, you could be an astronaut, you could be a pilot, you could be anything. And you could be the best in your field. But that doesn't mean that you're the best at everything all the time.
Sure.
And Susie is a phenomenal martial artist. She's able to beat up anyone she runs into, but damn, she can't climb up a ladder. And I appreciate it. Like, we all run into those moments where we're like, this is something I'm not good at. And I loved that part of that scene.
She is wearing the worst shoes often for these fight scenes.
Admittedly.
She gets rid of them to her credit. She does take them off partway through.
But not until after she climbs the ladder.
Yeah, it's true. Right.
And then she has a moment that you just had where you're watching her, and I mean all of us as the you here, watching her going like, take those shoes off. And then she gets down off that ladder. It's like, what the hell was I doing with these shoes? That was stupid. Right. I'm not good
with ladders. But she's invested so much of her mental and physical ability into her fighting capabilities.
Yeah.
That part of her brain was like,
shut down.
I don't need to take these off.
Sure. Yeah, just keep going.
Well, I can't fight. I'm not even a white belt. I've never fought karate in my life. And the first thing I think is like, I better take the shoes off before I climb that ladder. But, you know, anyway.
Yeah. Safety first.
Chris, your favorite scene.
It's the one you mentioned before where the interrogation with the snake, for all of the reasons that you get, because it is just so wonderfully absurd. Vic Diaz is great as always. And it just like she hops up onto the thing around the it's not a steel cage,
like, but it's fence.
Yeah, the fence, like fence around yeah. the arena, and then hops. Then she picks up the snake, deadliest cobra in the world. She picks it up and then throws it down on Vic Diaz. It is sublime in its absurdity.
And later on, she cannot handle a ladder.
Yeah.
incredible stuff. Erica, your favorite scene?
My favorite scene was fighting the two guys and putting the guy face plant into the saw.
Of course, yeah. Oh, yeah. The lumberyard fight scene.
Oh, my God.
Lumberyard fight scene.
And as I said, mine was the kung fu knives. The knives love scene.
The knives just, sex scene.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just... Mm-hmm. And I'll just say quickly, it's just one of those scenes. There's something about, I mean, we've mentioned before Alan Holzman's Forbidden World being one of those movies that just encapsulate what New World did, and he did it very well. And that's one of those scenes. It's just like, when you watch a New World movie, this is what you get. Like, that beautiful ballad in the background, but they're cutting off each other's clothes with knives, and she's slapping them around, and you're just like... And then they start to kind of make love, but their bodies are not situated in a way where lovemaking can happen. If it is, it's very difficult. And they're raising the difficulty levels for reasons that I'm not sure. And it's just like this.
Maybe they're just rubbing nuggets, Ryan. They're just rubbing nuggets.
Wow.
Rubbing nugs.
Wow.
Rubbing nugs.
You know what? We need more scenes where characters are just rubbing nugs. And that's what New World delivers time and time again.
Oh, rubbing nugs. Oh, no. All right. We're good.
All right. Here's some final questions. There was a field sound man. Vicente Gona is credited in the credits as a field sound man. What happened, my guy?
Yeah. Where are you? Where are you, Vicente?
Every day he went back and was like, I didn't get the sound.
Do you need microphones for this scene? We need Mike. They're gonna talk like,
he's just there listening, going like two thumbs up. Sounds great.
With just the wire to his headphones, just like loose, just flapping.
He's holding
in the
a pole, but it's got no mic at the end.
Yeah, nothing, no equipment.
My God,
sounds good.
What happened, my guy? Oh my gosh. Anyway, okay. So, writer, actor Ken Metcalf. He also co-wrote a movie called Dynamite Johnson. Do you think it's similar to this and TNT Jackson?
I mean, I'd find out. I mean, it's was it a New World picture?
It's not a New World movie. No.
Well, could it be nearly New World? I mean, let's.
That's got nearly New World written all over.
Is it about miners rubbing nugs?
Do you mean miners, like guys that go into mines?
Yes, I should have opened with that. Guys that go into mines.
Yes.
I want to be very clear.
Okay.
Well, it's very
M-I-N-E-R-S.
Very...
Yeah, that's right.
They're very sooty nugs.
just for you guys, I'll read the synopsis, Letterboxd synopsis. Master Johnson, Yap, stars as Dynamite Johnson, a crippled boy who undergoes an operation by bionic doctors to make him super bionic.
What?
In the same hospital is a man suffering from terrible burns inflicted by a giant robot dragon, which looks like it is made from silver cardboard. And his delirious ramblings are overheard by Johnson with his super bionic ears, leading to an investigation which uncovers an evil Nazi plot for world domination.
Oh, holy my shit. God.
Wow.
Well, yeah.
You have to do this movie. You have
to.
We have to.
I've never wanted to turn off the podcast and turn on a movie fan more than this moment.
I'm going
to
find it. Oh. I'm going to find it tonight.
Dynamite.
Just right around the corner.
Oh, my God. I mean, yeah. It's amazing.
I mean, I'll say it. It's got, you know, connotations.
It's a lot going on. It's probably maybe 65 minutes. It seems like
amazing.
Lots
amazing.
Happening.
Oh, my All God. Right.
Let's just do a little bit of quick research. You guys talked about how much you love the music for the movie. Well, it may sound familiar if you are a big fan of New World's Shogun Assassin, because it's the same music.
Oh, really?
Yep. Oh. Reused. Oh. Shogun Assassin, which took two Lone Wolf and Cub movies, the first two,
yep.
Sliced them together. It's a classic. It's a New World classic. Speaking of music, this is what Susan, when we talked to Susan Justin about her many scores for New World Pictures movies, here's what she told us about the music for Firecracker.
So Alan was doing the trailer for Firecracker. And so he got me the job to do the music. And I got too close to Henry Mancini's. You know, yeah. I had the bass loop yeah. thing happening. I changed it, but not enough. And they had to pay Mancini for it.
Oh no.
Oh no.
Like
Roger did.
Like an ice, you know? Ice
oh, no.
situation.
Wow. Oh no.
Roger had to pay the money. Yikes.
Shoot.
But what's funny is I think he had to pay the money because he wanted to keep it.
Mm.
So, you know, too. It wasn't like after the fact.
Did he use it for anything else, do you know?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think you would pay twice for it, you know?
That's true. That's true.
So, yeah, so I learned an important thing, you know.
Change it just enough. Change it just enough, right? Did you just do the music for the trailer, or did you do music for some of the scenes in the film too?
I did. I think I remember I did a scene that was really disgusting about somebody getting their head squeezed in a vice on a, you know, in a garage on a bench.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I kind of remember that. And I don't remember what the music was like, but yeah, I remember doing that. There was also a thing where Alan tells a good story about this. I couldn't retell it, but it was a love scene.
Yes.
And I think they were
right.
standing on a bed with knives.
Yeah. They were cut the clothes off of each other with these yeah. kung fu knives. Yeah.
I got to score that too.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
That's awesome.
Speaking of also Alan Holzman, here's what he said in Roger Corman's New World Pictures and Oral History Volume 1 about this particular scene. He said, the love making scene. When it came time for me to do the love scene in Firecracker, I thought, oh, I'll have the woman take off the guy's pants with kung fu knives. I read Roger the scene and he said, Alan, that's brilliant. For the action scene, I used Roger's Lumberyard, which was New World Studio. When Jillian gets out of the cab, it's supposed to take place in the Philippines, but I thought the lumberyards look the same anywhere in the world. So she gets attacked by two guys in New World's Lumberyard, and every time they have a skirmish, she loses one article of clothing. I beat Roger's record of 84 setups in one day. I reached 91.
Wow.
Wow.
But he said not to get too excited. He told me there's someone with 135. He had two sets and would call action on one and then run over to the other one to yell cut. So that's him working on Firecracker.
You will never be good enough.
And there's just not a... yeah, that's right. Wow. There's not a lot about this movie. I will say that it opens late March 1981 in the South, reaches California in late May. That's they would sort of take the prints and just sort of move them around. They follow the sun strategy, as I read in one of the New World Pictures oral history books by Stephen Armstrong. Hmm. They sort of like start on there and then follow the sun over to the West Coast in order to keep capitalizing on the drive-in market. But There's not much else on this movie. It is just not a lot going on. So instead, we're going to just end with a little bit of do you or don't you believe IMDb trivia? So we're going to read a little bit of IMDb trivia.
Ooh, okay.
And do you believe it or do you not believe it? For one, it says it is believed that Darby Hinton was cast as Chuck Donner because he resembled and could be made up to look like adult star John Holmes, who was well known at the time.
Believe it.
I don't buy that.
I believe it.
I don't buy it.
I'm going to say I believe it. Why not? I don't think so, and I think it's just somebody's corny theory, but you know what? I want to print the legend. The Fight Club Arena of Death venue seen in the movie was noticeably used for the film Enter the Ninja, which debuted around the same time.
I don't believe it.
All of the above.
I believe it. I believe that one.
I checked out a little bit of the beginning of Enter the Ninja, and I think it is the same. I don't know for sure, but I think it is the same. I think they shot some of it in the Philippines. So probably
it looks much better in Enter the Ninja. I won't lie. It looks a little more. It's a little more. Yeah,
for sure. Bug spray was used to simulate mist in one scene.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah.
I'll buy that.
Oh God, that'd be so hard to breathe in. That would be awful.
Yeah.
No.
I would believe it because, I mean, I just think they probably needed some mist and that was the best they could probably do. Mm-hmm. But they used,
the taste on your lips, you would just be like, oh.
Oh, yeah. It would be so awful. Yucky. It would be miserable. But, when they shot Battle Beyond the Stars and they did that outdoor area where they're running around, they put it on the stage, they put all over the stage is Fuller's Earth. And everybody's just running around and kicking that up. And that stuff is not good to breathe at all. And not a good... But they did it because, it was the 70s. Darby Hinton wasn't initially paid after the principal shooting of this movie in the Philippines was done. It wasn't until he came back to America and did a few additional scenes for the picture that he was finally paid for acting in it.
Sure. I believe that.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, did he get to keep his wardrobe? Is really the question.
Yeah, that's most important.
I mean, that's honestly
invaluable. Invaluable right there. Lastly, it says the name of the Fight Club venue was quote the Arena of Death.
No, it was just the arena.
Of the nightclub? Yeah.
The name of the nightclub is just the arena. Oh, see it outside.
Walk outside and it says the arena.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he calls it the Arena of Death, but that's just what they call it. You know? Yeah.
It's not on the marquee.
Yeah. I mean,
that's just a bonus. Added value. That's added value for your ticket that you get. Yeah. And you're also getting you're getting a magician, you're getting some comedy, you're getting a singer, you're getting martial arts, people die.
You're getting your money's worth.
Value for money.
Value. The savings.
Yeah.
Okay. No, this is the last one. The fight scene where Jillian Kessner's bra was sliced off was a legitimate accident while filming. Director Sirio Santiago decided to leave it in the movie while editing.
No.
No.
100%
no.
100%
no.
No
way you'd be able to do that.
No.
No,
been too, because it the guy's got a hand side. There's a lot of sides around this lumber yard, and the guy's got a hand side. He slices it just to get her to slice open her bra. Too far, you've cut her in half, and it's too just not enough. It's just air. It's just it's perfect.
No, and it's there's shot no during way. The lumber yard scene is when she does it. The whole point of Alan adding extra scenes. Is that they didn't add nudity.
Mm-hmm.
That's why IMDb trivia drives me crazy, and I don't normally go to it. But I was desperate to find anything out about this movie, so I resorted to my least favorite.
And TNT Jackson has a very scantily clothed fight scene as well. Like, that was in... It's contextualized a little differently, but it's not quite as comically done. Let's put it that way. But, they had... the protagonist has a nude fight scene. It's not like, oh, that wasn't just made up. That was in the previous version.
And it's weird that, I mean, it's directed by this Sirio Santiago yet again. So it's weird that he wouldn't, like, he's already borrowing the total storyline. Why not just do it again? And it probably was frustrating for Roger to have the film come back and him go, well, where was the nudity? You did it last time. Why didn't you do it this time? You know, it had to be like, what the hell? I don't know. But that's it. That is it for Firecracker. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Watching two movies.
Man, this crowd. I'm really impressed.
Oh, it's too much. It's too much.
It's whatever. No.
Too much.
What we just talked amongst ourselves. There's about five people. But Chris, you brought brought the heat.
Please.
Yeah. God, they really, the balconies even, everyone stood up. That was amazing.
You got to bring me back when you do TNT Jackson because I've already watched it.
You're ready. You're not ready.
And Dynamite Johnson.
Yeah.
Dynamite Johnson. Oh, my God. Chris, thank you again for joining us. Your podcast, absolutely one of our favorites. We love it.
Oh,
tell everybody about Get Me Another. And I know you have a series coming up that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, I host a podcast called Get Me Another, and what we do is in each series we examine a blockbuster film, what made it work, and why, and then we explore all the films that tried in one way or another to replicate its success. And we are kicking off our next series on July 1st, Get Me Another Jaws, exploring the many movies in which humans are menaced by animals that followed in Jaws's very considerable wake. And we're very excited for it. It's going to be a fun summer of animal mayhem.
Yeah,
love it.
That's awesome.
We're a podcast that we only have the knockoffs. We can't talk about the original ones. Just the knockoffs. But it's a great podcast. It's so much fun. Series on Fatal Attraction was just. It was so good. It was excellent. And
thank you.
I love going through rewatching a couple of those 90s thrillers and then listening to the episodes. It was just an absolute blast. So everybody check out the Jaws. It's going to be great. It's the summer. It's summertime.
Oh my goodness.
Jaws, come on.
Jaws, it's 50th anniversary this year. 50 years.
50 years. Woo. Perfect timing by you guys. Check out Get Me Another wherever you find podcasts. If you want to listen to any of our episodes, go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. That's where you can find all of our episodes, articles, t-shirts. Buy a t-shirt just like we're all wearing on this podcast.
I am wearing a t-shirt. Everyone is wearing a t-shirt.
Buy a t-shirt to help support the show or tell a friend about the show. Give us a 5-star review. Help us help you as we go through all the movies of New World Pictures. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, a part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening. To hear more shows from the Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network, please select the link in the description.
Hey, this is Jason Kleberg from the Force 5 podcast, a show that forces a guest to come up with a movie-themed top 5 list topic, and then we reveal our picks on air. Top 5 heist films, top 5 tearjerkers, top 5 movie dogs. Every show you'll be asking yourself, what would be on my list? Guests include directors, screenwriters, actors, podcasters, musicians, authors, and even a professional wrestler. Subscribe to the Force 5 podcast, and you won't just be a listener, you'll be a list nerd. The Force 5 podcast, available wherever you're listening now.